Social media to me is the most important thing for any business right now, purely for the fact of the efficiency of which you can get in front of your dream clients is ridiculous. Old traditional models, you partner with someone, you go out and meet them, try and convince them to refer your clients, or you try and find somewhere in the ether where a whole lot of your clients congregate and try to frequent there enough until you add enough trust. Whereas now, network with someone for an hour, learn from them, make a whole lot of content, and then people call me. But the fundamental problem with social media is so misunderstood. People don't quite get it, but it just works so incredibly well if you take the time to understand it, that I wish I knew it 5 years ago. Even just in the last month, the impact this had on my clients' businesses is crazy. And it's all because I took the time to learn something. So in this one, we're going to talk to someone that's further along than me, and we disagree. Maybe I'm wrong, not sure. Time will tell, but we talk about stories, we talk about marketing, and we talk about how to grow something meaningful in all the chaos and all the challenge. It happened by accident that I was working with insurance brokers because I got a financial advisor as a client, happened to be an insurance broker. And then I had other people that after doing the cold calling started reaching out saying, oh, how can you help me? And then I was trying to work out how to create offers for them to go on the Facebook ads. And it became really hard, and I spent like a day, maybe 2 days, to make a compelling offer and thinking about the Alex Hormozi structure. And then I was like, well, how am I going to sell it? And then who is their target market? And it was just so much context flip. So then I was like, well, why don't I just work on one thing? And then when I started working with financial advisors, financial planners don't make enough money to pay for the ads. Mortgage brokers have too much of a delay before they get revenue. Insurance brokers make a stupid amount of commission up front, and they actually got a great product that's universal appeal. So that's how it happened.
Sweet. Well, it's cool that you figured out your little niche, especially if you understand it. That's the biggest thing. Because if you understand the space that you're in, then that's half of it, right? People don't have to reinvent the wheel when they're talking to you to try and do the marketing. So.
Well, there's so many levels when you go niche. Like, I don't know, have you ever heard of a software Go High Level?
Yeah.
Fuck it.
So we use it.
Oh, there you go. Well, I was thinking, like the big challenge with advisors, they pay something like $1,000 a month for a bullshit CRM. And I was like, I'll just give that for free. You know what I mean? And have it all customized to the specific industry they're in. And then the next thing, bottleneck with them, is how much clients they can service. So it's like, why don't you turn the meeting they have into a transcript that turns into a statement of advice. And a statement of advice is a legal requirement for an advisor to demonstrate why they're recommending a certain thing. So when you just go like balls deep on one little niche, you can go crazy. But anyway, enough about me. What are you doing? What's up with you, mate? What are you running? You travel around the world now. You're a hustler with a nice backdrop.
I'm back, as I said before, back in New Zealand. Been overseas for the last year and a half, which has been pretty cool, pretty exciting. Spent a little bit of time in the States, then a bit of time in Europe, and then spent a good chunk in Aussie, which was definitely interesting to see how different but similar it is to New Zealand. And so that was cool. It was always going to be like a fixed term sort of period. We were like never really going to go there for like forever, no matter how much I love Aussie. You have to deal with Aussies to live in Aussie. Aussie was really good. It was epic. But and got some really cool new clients all over Aussie now. Now back in Kiwiland, back at home, which is really nice, and able to, I think as I said just before, able to surf as much as I want. It's been an epic week this week, so get that good lifestyle balance of surf every morning or cycle and then work with clients that we've got over New Zealand and Australia and the States. So it's good.
Yeah. How are you finding, like, do you have a particular niche, or is it everywhere and anything and with different time zones? Like, how are you coping?
I guess we definitely have a couple of like clear niches that we work in. One of them's automotive. And we just know the industry pretty well, and we have like clear systems that we know work to drive results in that space. And then we do like a bunch of like, we've got clients on across lots of different industries. We've got e-commerce, across clothing, across gardening, across what else is like, yeah, we've got so many different e-commerce sort of clients that fit across different niches. But if I was to say the niches that we sort of work across more, it would be finance, not like finance, like what you're talking about, where it's like insurance brokers and real estate agents per se, like that's quite work intensive. From like a, there's a lot of labor that can go into that, which we just don't really want to dabble in that space because there's so much back and forth and time can get wasted from our experience anyways. So we work more across like the ones that you don't want to do. So mortgage brokers, and as I say, automotive, across a whole range of different automotive, whether it's car dealerships or whatever else it is, brands. Yeah, it just depends. And then outside of that, our next biggest niche is events and musicians. So we do quite a lot of advertising in the music space. So I used to do be quite involved in the event space. So we were doing stuff with a range of different sort of labels and things like that, because we would, one, be running our own events and like working with Auckland Unlimited or Tourism Bay of Plenty or Tauranga City Council or whatever else it is. So we'd be delivering an event. So we have contacts in with all the different musicians and event promoters and things like that. So now that we're sort of not running events per se, we're still involved in that space. So we know the Endeavour Live guys at Rhythm and Vines. We know the Loop, who do everything from LAB and everything else. Or we've got Shapeshifter and everything else. So it just depends what it is. So do some pretty cool, exciting projects. So yeah,
sounds fancy and chaotic. What would you say your skill set within the business is? Is it engineering offers? Is it strategic? Are you particularly good at certain advertising platforms? What would you say your talent is? And be pretend there's no tall poppy syndrome. Yeah, you go.
Me specifically. I think my main, like in terms of where I sit in the business now, has obviously changed since when I started 5 years ago. But my biggest thing where I offer value is more around like the strategic placement of ways that campaign should probably be promoted. Because I've started across like running ads and doing all of that stuff, like I can build a YouTube campaign, I can build a Facebook campaign, I can build a TikTok campaign, but that's not the stuff that I should be spending my time on. So I'm currently pivoting so that I don't really touch any of that stuff anymore. And I've got the team that sort of implement and do all of that. So my role now is much more around talking to clients and sort of saying, okay, well, you're currently struggling in this space. How could we potentially take you over here? And then if we can't help you as an agency, here's another agency or another subcontractor or someone else that could potentially level up that space. So like a really good example of that, something that we don't really ever do, is email marketing. Like we can do it and we can implement it, but if you want someone who's like really specialized in that email space, it's just not something that we really do. So we have different partners that will sort of do that. So it depends on the client and what they want and how they want to leverage the different platforms to what we would do. So yeah, my biggest thing is definitely the strategy component. And then like creating like cool content, for example. So it's not just like someone talking to a camera being boring, having something a little bit more spicy.
Yeah, you definitely got spicy videos. So just what, in terms of a decision tree or a framework in terms of determining what's the appropriate platform and how to service that platform in a way that's going to get results, do you break it down by demographic, who they're trying to target and that's the appropriate platform? Do you think about how you can represent their service or product and that determines the platform? Or how do you go through determining where they need to go?
So I think the first thing I would always ask a client is what their end goal is. It's probably the one of the key things because if you look at a client who, how would I say it, they want an easy lifestyle and they don't want to have to do much, they're probably going to be having a very different conversation with me than someone who's wanting to scale up and grow really quickly. So it really depends on where they're wanting to take the business. And I guess there's good examples of that in two clients that we've kind of worked with, which are in the exact same industry in the finance sector. And one of them wanted to scale up and grow really fast. And they wanted to go from a team of four to about a team of 80 within about a year to a year and a half. So there was this massive like growth trajectory, and they knew that they wanted to where they wanted to get to basically. So for that, they've got a very different discussion about saying, okay, well, these are the platforms you would use, and this is the sort of budget that you're going to require to get to that. Because if you want to get that many new staff, you're going to need to get this many leads to then to go through that. Whereas there's another business who is in, as I said, the exact same niche. They've got a really good client base, they've got a team of about six. And they're happy with that size, but all they want is to get good brand awareness and generate higher quality leads. They don't want to have to filter through stuff, which no one does. But at the same time, if you're wanting to scale up really big, you're going to have to do that because there's no way around that. So yeah, so like I think that would be the first thing is where do you actually see your business going and what's your end goal? And then from there, it would then be saying, okay, well, this is who your brand's talking to or who you want to talk to. This is where those people are. And this is who we should target. So like a brand which is new, for example, is going to have a very different discussion to say someone who's not new. And if you look at it from a music perspective, as an example, there's bands that we work with that are really popular globally. So their audience when they release songs and things like that is going to be much more specific to their current listeners to get them to listen to their new music. And then outside of that, it's then getting new listeners, right? Whereas newer bands, their main thing is obviously targeting their followers, but then alongside that, you want to get out to the people that are new and have never heard of them before, so they might potentially listen to their stuff or whatever else it is. So there's like really depends on what you're sort of playing at and who you want to talk to. Because yeah, like TikTok could be good for one business, but it also might not be for someone in the same industry, but they're not talking to the right audience or they're not willing to create the right type of content that fits their brand. So yeah, that would be my, if that answers your question.
Yeah, no, it's good. I'd be interested. I've been obsessed with offers these days, and I think it'd be quite interesting to go deep on the music thing because I never even consider it. And for no reason other than I'm curious how you will determine what problem or what thing or dream outcome people are trying to achieve when they consume music and leads to them wanting to take action. What do you do? So you've got a musician, you want to promote them, and obviously you have some sort of offering as well as some sort of creative that you're using to get people to take a certain action. What do you actually think in music or in trying to market music people are actually buying? Like, is it just a discount? Are they actually buying an underlying need to fulfill their emotional, challenges with their parents and the lyrics speak to them, so you try to target them through that? Or what do you think about when you market music?
I think it depends on what you're selling within the music space because there's lots of different parts to it. So there's events, which is obviously selling live shows and things like that. Then there's the actual music itself. And then there's merchandise, like people consuming it. When I say music, I mean consuming it on the likes of Spotify, which is, I can't remember the exact stat, but it's like nearly 90% of all music consumed in New Zealand is basically Spotify now, and Apple Music is dead. So, Yeah, like in short, it depends on what part of the, let's call it those three parts. You're either selling merch and like records, selling listenership, or selling events, right? And they all have very different selling points. Events is very experiential. And a really good example of someone who does that really well is the Endeavor Boys, who sell Rhythm and Vines on an experience. They sell out basically before they've even announced a lineup. People go to those shows based on a destination they're going to. They know it's going to be a great time and everything else around that, right? But then there's shows which are like, say, a dedicated show, which is just an artist with some other people, and people are going to that for the memories of, I listened to that song when I was getting married, or I listened to that song and it was when, I don't know, there's so many different things, and there's those times where you get that. So you go to those sort of events based on that, and you sort of need to pull on that brand identity. And each band has a band, like a brand identity. Like if you were to look at Flaxies, which is an up and coming band, they're like frothing, surfing, young dudes who have young girls screaming at them because they're just a group of lads. But then you look at, say, someone like Shapeshifter, who's a much more established, long-standing band who has an older demographic, which is selling on, basically, they've got this iconic music, which is very Kiwi summer, but they talk to a slightly older demographic, but they're also trying to bring in that younger demographic. Do you know what I mean? So that's where that sits. But then in terms of like releasing music, that's another whole game in itself, because there's so many different platforms that you have to communicate on, and then there's platforms which are like you can actually advertise directly on, like Spotify, where they have their own way of communicating, where it's like releasing an album or releasing a single, and it notifies people or getting put into new playlists or whatever else it is. There's so many different ways to do it. It's the way you're selling, it depends on what you're trying to sell and whether it, like, the band itself needs to have it. Like if you think about Taylor Swift, for example, she has probably one of the biggest cult followings in the world, and she just talks about love stories basically. And people relate to that, right? Like it's they understand it, and they feel connected to it. And she's quite a empowering woman. So because of that, people relate to that. And even if they don't necessarily like the music, they like who she is because she's standing up for women and things like that. So yeah.
I see brand kind of like classic conditioning at scale. It's kind of like, Pavlov's dog, where he used to, every time they show him food, he'd ring a bell. And then you take the food away and then you just ring the bell. It's like Nike, like for example, Nike, you wouldn't put Nike on a hotel. You haven't made that association yet. You haven't linked the stimulus to the feeling that people have. So it's quite interesting. You talked about the nostalgia or the brand association they had and what they expect. And it's almost like the compliance ladder. So where it's like, this happened, they got this result. So they're more willing to do this next step because they got a positive outcome. And that's partly why offers on Facebook or on any sort of advertising platform where it's free, the likelihood of achieving the outcome that you want is very high. So it's interesting. You look at the brand experience and the lead up, who that would attract, the experiences they've had in the past, and how to leverage off that to take them to a new step, to a new place. I'm actually on a tear now, but there's another guy, Chris Williamson? This podcast guy, Modern Wisdom.
No, I'm going to be honest and say no, I don't. But yeah,
So
fire away.
he had one of the biggest promotion companies in the UK, events company in the UK, and he said that the crazy thing about clubs and events and promotion is you actually, the product isn't the event, the product is the people. You're selling the people. So it's like if you go to a club and it's empty, it doesn't matter how good the DJ is.
Yeah.
So you're selling status. But I'm just
Well, it's
wondering,
like Vegas, right? Like, I haven't been to Vegas, but one of my mates was in Vegas and had two experiences. One was he was with an influencer and went to these clubs and was getting given free drinks and everything else like that in these clubs in Vegas. And he said it was the most insane experience of his life, right? He had this experience of being like this guy walking around all these clubs invited, didn't have to pay for anything. And it was just amazing. He went a week later, 1 or 2 weeks later, with some friends. So it wasn't with like these influencers. And he said that Vegas was one of the worst experiences he's ever been to because he wasn't in the crowd where it was lots of fun, because he was paying like $150 to get into a bar. He's then paying extortionate amounts for drinks and he has no status. So like, that's obviously a slightly different angle of what you're saying, but it's the same thing as if you go to an event and you know that these people are going, you're more likely to go, right? So, and you often see that catalyst effect, right? Which is why when you see events, often there'll be an announcement ticket sale, then it will drop down and there'll be a really slow, gradual amount of tickets, usually, depending on how big the artist is, but it'll be gradual. And then as you get closer to the event, it starts to ramp up because people have seen the ad here, they've seen a billboard, they've seen all these different sort of touch points. And then as you get closer, usually it just skyrockets. So that week before the event, you'll see it like double every single day. And then suddenly you'll be selling like, depending on the size of the show, like 300, 500 tickets in the day before the show, if they haven't sold out.
Do you think about how to, like, Alex Mosey has this value thing where he's like, value is dream outcome, the likelihood you're going to achieve it. So that's like trust and credibility and social proof. How quickly you achieve it with the least amount of effort. That's why Amazon has one click, or Netflix is really easy to access and you just watch it. That's why they're really valuable companies. Do you think how to engineer social proof? You're creating this party. You want to make sure that the person just doesn't turn up on their own and they're enhancing their status by going there. How do you think about making it appear busy, or how do you think about social proof?
Well, that's what all like new events do, right? They're always doing that. They'll have photos of lots of people in a space enjoying themselves, or it's people having a laugh, popping champagne or whatever it is, and showcasing what it's going to be like. People want to know what that experience will be like. That's a big part of, that's the hardest part, I guess, of like any, starting any business, not even just events. Like, think about any brand, like, it's showcasing that people enjoy it or people want it. So if people want it, other people want it, you're going to want it, right? I think any product you're selling has to show some degree of want. And that's also why Apple always puts a limitation on when they release certain products. It's like you buy it and then suddenly, oh, we've sold out. You guys have to wait now. And because of that, if you can't get it when you want it, people get frustrated and then they order like Tesla. Another good example, like, you know, like all of these brands follow similar models, but you have to have this pure, like, this initial starting point to get that want, and it's whether you sell it purely on product or if you sell it like being a really good product. I mean, Zuru do that as a really good example with their bunch of balloons, right? They have the best product in that space globally, right? There's no question about it. People have tried to duplicate it. They've tried to do other things around it. But at the end of the day, you can blow up some balloons in like 10 seconds and you've got like 50 of them. But then you've got these other products that still take 4 minutes to get, 5 minutes to get to that same thing, right? So whether you're selling pure product and you're selling it based on the fact that you have the best product, or are you selling it based on like the other parts around it, like experience or the fact that other people want it, or solving a need, and that's where you're what you're saying is around providing an offer. Every single thing that you push out is in a sense an offer. because you're offering an experience, you're offering a solution, whatever it is. It's the same thing as for us as an agency when we've run some ads, which you mentioned before. Like, we have a bit of a laugh with our like content that we create, and like it is a bit more fun because like may as well showcase what our brand is like as a personality. Like, we're going to have a bit of fun when we work with you. And if you don't want to do that, then don't work with us. It's as simple as that. But like at the same time, right? Like, you've got to, for an agency like yourself or like us, when we make an offer, we're showcasing what we're going to do. And we're going to showcase that we can get you from here to here. And at the end of the day, that's how that all of us are trying to do that one thing. But then alongside that one simple offer, you need to showcase who you are and why you, because lots of people can say that they're going to run some Facebook ads or they're going to create an offer. If you can showcase that you've created an offer for yourself or whatever else it is, that's, I guess, the key part of it. So, yeah, that's what I'd say.
I think one of the most important thing in advertising I'm learning, as I say, turns out I'm pretty good at Facebook ads. It started slow, but is the efficiency of which you target people and the way that you ostracize people, the efficiency of which you ostracize and alienate people from even engaging with it. So a good example was Gym Launch, the agency, pretty much licensee/agency that works with gym owners to market for them. And they found with the research that the highest top 20%, the best customers they had that paid the most were conservative. So they've, you know, they like Trump, stuff like that. So maybe that's not so conservative, but so in the ad, what they did is they wore a hat that says "Make gyms great again." So if you think about it, that's appealing to conservatives. It's appealing to gym owners, who's their target demographic, and it's alienating people that aren't their top 20%. So do you ever think about how do you balance between going all in on a target but completely ostracizing the broad market, so then the cost per impression might be higher because you're going really in, or you don't care? Like, how do you think about the call-outs in a sense?
I think it just depends on who you're talking to. Like, and like, you're never going to suit every single person, right? Like, it's just as simple as that. You're never going to be. And if you are, you're probably doing something wrong, because you're not pulling on heartstrings, or you're not doing something right. Right. Like, I can't remember what ad it was I saw the other day. I can't remember who it was made by either. I don't think it was a motion sickness one, but it was great content. And it was, it had something like within the first 2 days, it had like 5 or 6 complaints to TV about saying that it was inappropriate. And like, that's the sort of thing in some ways that you kind of want, because if people are watching it and they're complaining, as long as it's not actually going too far, I mean, hell, you can't please everyone. And then the people it is talking to, they absolutely love it. Like, I thought it was great content. I actually can't even remember what the ad was now. But it was phenomenal. It was just like those ads where you watch and you're like, this is good. This is great, great source. But yeah, I think no matter what, if you're creating ads and you actually want to stand out from the crowd, you're always going to potentially offend people, or they're going to be like, I don't like that, and it's not going to talk to them at all. But it also means that if you don't talk to those people, you're definitely talking to probably one specific group or niche that you want to, right? Which is why with when you're saying offers, usually you need a really good hook, and that hook needs to come in the first 5 seconds, otherwise it's pointless.
Even so, the first 1.5 seconds now.
100%.
On the hook thing, what do you think about hook? You know, cause I sort of see marketing kind of like just humans getting, like, marketing is just getting closer to normal human interactions. So the same principles apply. Like if I'm walking down the forest and I see a bright red thing, I might pay attention to it. If I'm walking down the forest and I see strong facial expressions on someone's face, I'll be like, oh, what's going on? And I'll look and it'll draw my attention. Or if I hear a loud sound, or if someone starts a speech and they say a very polarizing and captivating thing that makes me curious, I'm going to listen. What do you think about with hooks? What makes a good hook, in your opinion? Hard question.
Well, just talking to the right person, right?
Mm.
It's like identifying who it is you want to talk to. It's the same for like so many things. Same with music, right? Like there's even musicians have hooks. Like, who was it the other day? Post Malone was talking about Taylor Swift was talking about Post Malone, saying how that song has one of the best hooks they'd ever heard. And like everything across, whether it's a product or whether it's music or whether it's talking to your partner, there's ways to get attention, right? And even walking down the street, so many people, it's interesting going from country to country when you're overseas and you see who smiles in countries and who doesn't smile, even just by state to state in America. Like it's just by smiling at someone, it's really hard not to smile back, like really hard. So it's funny when you do that and you're happy and you give someone a smile, they're going to smile back and it makes them suddenly almost want to talk to you, right? So I think creating that hook, going back to what you said, I think you need to identify who it is you're talking to and go from there, whether that's business owners, whether that's gym owners, whether that's cars, whether that's e-commerce brands, whether that's whoever it is, finance brokers, whatever. It's identifying who it is you want to talk to, and then from there it's then selling. Simple as that. There's no other way around it. And then you build your brand around what you're offering, because if you were selling the same product, say two brands are selling the exact same offering, you need to make sure it sits within your business structure of why choose you over someone else.
It'd be interesting, because you mentioned automotive. Here's a challenge for you. So you're selling automotive, is it cars? Is that what you sell?
Or that's one, yep.
One of them? Yep. So let's say you weren't allowed to use the word car and you weren't allowed to mention car. What do you think people are actually buying when they get a car?
One of the biggest things is like relationship.
With the car or to 100%. Get a relationship?
Well, it depends which angle you want to take, like on the relationship word, right? 100%. You can sell the fact that if you have a nice car, you're going to be able to get into a nice relationship. That's one option. Or you can get a girlfriend, or you can whatever, because usually the audience is male dominated. So like you're going to be able to talk to that audience a little bit better. Huh. But then alongside that, that's also the relationship with like the person you're buying from, right? Whether it's selling privately or selling through a car dealer, people get scammed all the time. Like they'll buy a car, then suddenly the radiator blows up. Like you're buying based on who it is and the fact that you're going to be able to trust them. So it's identifying what you as a brand can offer that is different or at least the same as other people selling. And then in terms of the actual vehicle themselves, it's hard to say, because if you're selling new cars, for example, it's very different to selling used cars. But again, it all fits within that same model, right? Like, why do you purchase anything? Like, why do you spend $50 on a towel compared to buying a towel which is $10 or $5, right? Because if you buy the $50 towel, you're hoping it's going to be super soft and cuddly, and when you get out of the shower, it's going to be like a big warm blanket, right? Whereas if you buy a $10 towel, you know that you can probably use that once you've used it to probably clean up the oil that's come out of the broken car that you just bought. So like it kind of depends on which audience you're talking to and what kind of experience you want.
Isn't it crazy that price is a brand in itself? You know, like if I put a table out and I say free, no one does shit. But if I put like $500, you know, it looks pretty decent and someone steals it, you know what I mean? Like there's associated value with price. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. Anyways, I want to go in depth on something, and I haven't found a marker that agrees with me, so I'm all out here on my own, apart from the guy I discovered on YouTube that taught me about it. It's on Facebook ads specifically, because I was running ads and it didn't make sense to me. Someone's like, oh yeah, you got to have a remarketing audience, and you should, for the people listening, remarketing is people that were sort of interested either in the video or took close to an action but didn't finish it off. And you have a percentage of remarketing. And then you have broad, or some say interest, because they think they got some special sauce and know better than Facebook. And I never understood why, even though I wasn't running remarketing, I was seeing the video more than once. And then I also didn't understand, why would I want people that didn't take the desired action that I wanted? You know, why would I keep spending money on them? Because part of what helps me make a good business is stability and predictable outcomes. So I need to keep getting new people in. And if it's already retargeting them, why would I spend money on retargeting? And when I kept going in more in depth, that most agencies' retention is only 3 months. So they lose clients. Every 3 months, they lose a client. So they're trying to get results as quick as possible. And also the metric they're using to show they're talented is the cost per acquisition. So they're saying, oh, I'm getting this cheaper. And you get it cheaper because of remarketing. We don't really know where the fuck it came from. Maybe they Googled you a year ago and it's being attributed to your remarketing campaign.
Yeah.
So I just do broad. And then if I look at the frequency for people, I'm going on a rant here because I can't find a human being that agrees. I look at frequency. Frequency is how often a person sees it. I run dynamic creative for people listening. It's like, let Facebook use the videos in the way it thinks best and the words and mix it together. I have three of those, three dynamic creatives. And I just go broad, one ad set, one campaign. And then the different dynamic creatives, I have a different frequency because Facebook's using them for remarketing, for middle of the funnel, bottom of the funnel. So how do you structure your Facebook ads, and why the fuck does no one agree with me? Am I wrong? And if I'm wrong, why am I wrong?
So I guess first off, great to see you've identified what some agencies do. Emphasize the word some agencies. Some agencies run on a model of turnover. So you have salespeople that go and sell, and then they basically burn. And that's a big reason why I wanted to start my own agency, because I was seeing that firsthand and I didn't feel comfortable with what was going on. So there's cheat codes in a sense that you can do, like what you said, where you'll get results, but then suddenly it dies after a short period of time because you're not bringing in new customers, right? But to answer your question on whether or not you should have a retargeting campaign, that all depends on what you're able to promote and what content you have, because if you have multiple touch points, then a retargeting campaign is really good. And there's some really cool ways that you can do that on different platforms, whether that's Facebook and Instagram, whether that's TikTok, whether that's YouTube, whatever. If someone's seen a video and then you want them to see another thing, you can push them down a funnel, right? So then you start to retarget based on things that they've interacted with or seen or whatever else it is. But you are correct in the sense where if you do provide an audience which is relatively wide, or a set audience that people have engaged with, Facebook will keep showing it to that person until they don't think it's really relevant anymore. So you do get some degree of retargeting with that anyways, depending on which campaign style you build out, right? So there's, for people who are listening, within a social campaign, you've got so many different types of campaigns. You've got video views campaigns, which targets people who like watching videos. There's traffic campaigns, which are people who are more likely to go to a website. There's lead forms, people who fill in lead forms. There's lots of different things you can do. Purchase campaigns, which are purely focused on people that are then going into to purchase and buy online, right? So there's lots of different elements to it. But to where and how you structure it, that really depends on what the product is and what you're trying to do. Because some businesses that we work with, they don't even really care about getting leads, and they don't even really care about making sales directly from ads. Their biggest thing is building their brand so that people know and trust them as a business. Or there's like other campaigns for government where they potentially only want to be seen and just pushed out a message that's relevant, and they don't want it to be seen by too many people. So you like multiple times. So you have to build in frequency caps and things like that. So I think it depends on what you're building, in short, and like your audiences. So I would say to you, it is really smart to like build out demographics based on age, for example, because then you can at least then see, okay, the same audience of 18 to 30 compared to say 31 to 65 plus, or whatever, how many audiences you want to create, you can see who and what's engaging and getting leads. And then there's ways that you can also track that. So you can say, okay, well, that 18 to whatever demographic potentially is making more phone calls, because you can track phone calls. Like that's one of the things that we do. We can see if a Google ad from this keyword has generated a phone call, or has this Facebook ad generated a phone call, or has it led to a form fill or whatever else it is. So I think, going back to your original question, do you think you need a retargeting campaign? I think it depends on what your content is and if you have enough content to push people down a bit more of a funnel. But if you don't, then retargeting can be quite restrictive, because it's a very small pool of people, which is why if you have a really small budget, sometimes it is better to go wider to get there. And that's often what you see also with any campaign. When you first launch a campaign, you should be, if they've never done advertising before, you need to build an audience before you can start retargeting. Like retargeting doesn't even work until you have a minimum of 1,000 basically interactions with your ad or website or whatever it is from that ad. And especially as cookies are disappearing, you're getting even more restrictive with the fact that to retarget now on like say social, you need to build out your audience on social, because as soon as they leave, it's becoming more complicated to actually retarget those people. So
I'm going to meet you halfway, and then I'm going to push back. So I'm going to meet you halfway on. It makes sense to me. If I can track a certain, like I dated this girl, she would track heat signatures of people in supermarkets to see where people congregate the most. So you know a certain behavior that people are taking, so you can put the things that have the highest margin in the place they congregate the most. So understanding a person's behavior and creating a tailored journey for them. Like I've seen ads where I go on a website, I click this button, and they're like, oh, hey, I love that you just read this article about blah, blah, blah. Here's this book that relates to this that will help. That makes sense. The few things I don't like about it is like my understanding of Facebook, it's like an auction. Like you're going to buy a house. You go to the auction. You're like, hey, I want to buy these eyeballs. And you're competing with all these other people. And if you spend the most and you've got a good enough creative, then you get the opportunity to get the eyeballs. Challenges, here comes over remarketing, like trying to bid against you when you're trying to get the same audience, because you know it's broad and it's found this person takes a positive action, let's target. So they're competing. The other thing is the decisions you're making is based on incomplete data compared to the 10 years of purchasing behavior data that Facebook has. So Facebook's had 10 years and knows Barry on January 31st at 2 o'clock when he's near McDonald's. Nah, maybe not that level, but like when he's near the shop, he buys shoes. and they serve it up. Whereas our data is based on this person watched this video. So because 1,000 people watched this video in this way, they're probably going to take this action. I personally would rather just let the machine work it out. And so far, the biggest thing I've noticed is the cost of acquisition is really low. The consistency of leads is really good. And the brand reputation is a lot better because you're not showing it to people that don't want to see it. But I could be wrong. But I'm going all in on it. So that's my pushback.
Yeah, and I'm not disagreeing. I think letting the platforms do what they need to do and having an understanding of that, but also providing some direction also means it doesn't go off track. I don't know what sort of budgets that you're playing with, but I mean, like, there's campaigns which we've run and we've literally created an audience of, say, sailing. It has nothing to do with sailing, and their purchase, like their cost per sale and their return on ad spend, has over doubled. It's like gets to like $10 per, and that's just by having those little niches, right? So until you have a budget where you can do that, I would 100% agree with you. Going wide and letting it do its thing is correct, unless you know that you're a sailing brand and you want to target sailing and blah, 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 blah. But then there's other things where unless you test things out, you're never going to know if that is a new audience that you could potentially talk to. And that retargeting element that you mentioned, I 100% agree again that, yes, you don't need to spend all your budget on that. And if you do, and your agency does tell you to do that, then what they're trying to do is get you some quick results. And then in 6 months' time, you're probably not going to end up getting very good results. Like it's literally as simple as that. But also in some campaigns you do need to do retargeting because you know that those are the people that potentially are going to most likely repurchase. So for example, events, you know that this 20,000 people have come to your show before. Pretty good place to start. So it depends where you are on that kind of journey.
Do you think Facebook would do it because it knows that, or do you don't think it would know that?
I think there's certain ways that you can make it so that you definitely do that through customer data lists and things like that. So like if you've got a list of 40,000 people that you know have been to your show before, well, you can create that list and have a budget dedicated just for that because you know that those people you want to hit. And then outside of that, you hit other people. Like it's...
Would those people respond to the new creative and offer that you've created? You know what I mean? Like they're people that went, have a positive association. Now you're creating a new ad. Are they going to be the ones that like that ad? So yeah. Are you hindering the system because you're telling it to, for this more expensive data that you've got based on an experience a person had back then? You know what I mean? Are they the same person? Are they happy? Do they have good experience? And does that
but you mean- don't know, like that's a million-dollar question, mate. Like you can't, like what you have to do as an agency or as a marketing person, you have to choose the data that you want to use to leverage, and you have to build audiences based around that, and you have to create messages that is relevant to those audiences. So if you're selling something and you know that this person has seen it, they've engaged with it, they like it, you know that potentially you should show them a different message which builds on that brand of why they could go to it. So when you are saying that, yes, this person hasn't engaged, why am I retargeting to them? If you're retargeting the exact same video over and over and over and over and over, it's pointless and you're wasting your money. But if you have something where, for example, you have seen my initial brand video, which is kind of me having a bit of a laugh, showcasing that we can help businesses, right? If you've engaged with that, that's awesome. You haven't taken an action, cool. But then post that, we can then give them, say, 5 other videos that we know is talking to people who have watched a certain period of that video that we could then offer them more value. So, and then once they stop watching that, then sweet, they don't have to interact with us ever again. But it's more saying that some people won't interact on that first interaction. They won't engage because they don't trust you. You're a new person. Why would they do that? So if you don't have a hook, going back to that, that's going to get them on that first point. It's then about then saying, okay, well, those people are interested, have a small budget for that, and then you can keep getting them to come in, but then keep bringing in new people, because it's just the way it's going to get the best results. Like, building new audience is definitely the way to go. But again, there's no right or wrong, because every business is so different, because some purchase cycles for, like, say, really expensive items isn't going to happen overnight. You're not going to just wake up one morning and go, I'm going to go buy a Dodge Ram, because they're $130,000. Like, you're not just going to wake up. You're going to do research. You're going to watch YouTube videos. You're going to do all these components that build into getting reviews and all that stuff. And there's a long purchase cycle, whereas potentially getting someone to help you with your marketing is going to be a little bit faster, because you have a need and you need it right now. But in saying that, some people also don't know they need it. So company A comes straight away. Company B sees you. 8 months down the line, they go, huh, that's that guy again. I do need someone at the moment, because we're launching a new product or whatever it is. Or my agency, spoke to someone the other day and they went with an agency that said they could do all this stuff, and they didn't use any of the assets that the company gave them for the ads. They used stock imagery. And, like, they didn't ask to push it live. They just pushed it all live. So for the last month, he thought that the ads were running with his assets, and it's been stock imagery. So that's an example where they've obviously reached out to me, because they're like, well, this ain't working. So, and that was just, that's purely from reminders, the fact that you are still there and that you aren't some cowboy who's going to rip them off. So,
well, I called all the cowboys. Because I was only good at video and maybe sales training and sales. And so I was like, oh, why don't I just fucking call them and partner with them? They run the ads. Called 200. 1% knew anything. You know what I mean? Like, mostly what they were locking people in for a 12-month contract, and to salespeople. And then there were some exceptional ones that barely had time to answer the phone. But anyways, you have the last word on that remarketing thing, so I won't push it. I'm open to learn, but thanks for coming on.
No, that's all good. I'd be interested to know who the cowboys are, though.
Yeah, well, name and shame, most of them, to be honest. So anytime they say SEO, I'm just kidding. Cool, well, thanks for coming on. Done.